Kiitos, thank you. So my name is Tiina, as Ilkka said, and my plan for this talk was that I run through first kind of the key issues in the yoga retreat game, so the core loop and the monetization ideas and stuff like that, in case there are people that, you know, don't know the game. And then I will talk about kind of practical things, what we've been thinking before even starting to develop the game, what we've been doing during the development very shortly, then mostly about the go-to-market piloting phase, and then a little bit about the ideas around launch. So kind of covering the steps that actually are involved in practice when you go to market with the game. And I was thinking that, so if we can do so, that you ask me questions when I start to kind of describe the practical reality behind making yoga retreat, that would be kind of most beneficial for me, because I don't know what the other people have been talking to you before me. So if there are kind of some things that, you know, you would like to understand in greater detail, then, you know, help me to give you more information if what I have in my slides or in my speech is too general. And so I'm very, very practical. I'm running a six-person company now 2 years. So, you know, you can ask practical questions, strategic questions, any questions you come, and I try my best to be as useful today for you as possible. So, few words about myself as well as our team before going to the game. So, I have two-folded career. I have 11 years corporate career in big companies like TeliaSonera and Nokia. All of those years doing B2C and having excellent opportunity at an age of 26 of being part of the first mobile publishing team based here in Helsinki, 99-2001, Sonera said. So that's where I kind of learned everything I know today about mobile publishing and the mobile publishing business. So at the time it was ringtones, logos and mobile games. So not only mobile games, but that's my first experience from publishing business. I basically, even in my corporate career, never done any real products, only digital products, only mobile, only online, but shops, transactional services, various types of kind of digital experiences. Then I've been a CEO in small game studios before becoming entrepreneur 2011. And founding Gayatri Studios. And other people in Gayatri Studios team are basically my ex-colleagues from games companies. So two guys, our developers joining from Rovio, having worked in one of the companies that I was a CEO of earlier. And then our artists joining from Digital Chocolate. And then we have a couple of other people in the team as well. But those are really kind of the key people behind the product, which is our focus today. So that's who we are. Yoga retreat is first in the world yoga-themed mobile simulation and time management experience. Maybe I just repeat that one more time, because we will also talk about the importance of having a clear, differentiated, focused USP for the player, for the journalist, for the investor. So, first in the world, yoga-themed, mobile, simulation, time management experience. That's, I think, most important thing for you people when you're kind of creating games or creating ideas around games, becoming entrepreneurs, producing games, whatever, to understand what you are doing. So, always kind of everything boils down to this, you know, what is in the core of what you're trying to do. I started to think when I was CEOing those two games companies that, you know, what's going on in the world is that guys are creating games for guys and there are not so many, you know, really interesting games that are mainly done for the female market. And 55% of casual online gaming audience are females. And then when I started to look into it more deeply, the kind of women or female market games are mainly restaurant management or shopping malls. And personally, I didn't find it very relevant. So then I thought that, you know, what's actually really interesting for women that are actually, you know, paying with their own money and having some money to kind of consume to games or any kind of related merchandising or franchising experiences, well, well-being is one of the most interesting content categories to which women spend a lot of money, but there are absolutely no kind of fun game simulation or none whatsoever having kind of this theme or this thematic in mobile nor in online. And so therefore kind of I thought that, okay, well, you know, this is something that I need to explore further. So I've been practicing yoga 10 years and I'm also a yoga teacher and I'm really enthusiastic about this authentic content thematic and how to bring authentic content to the games. So that's kind of the origins behind the yoga retreat idea. Gaming experience-wise, I chose management mechanic and click management because it's basically very reachable for a very wide mass market audience. Women who play with tablets or with phones, you know, don't necessarily like very complicated mechanics, but something that, you know, fits into their daily routines as well as something they understand, something which is easy to grasp. So that's, you know, one thing behind why this type of, let's say, harvesting and farming mechanic related to yoga. The business model is tied into further expanding and building your retreat. So you need mat factories, juice bars, steam rooms, stuff like that around your yoga floor in order to serve your customers better. Really, everything boils down into the fact that you have different type of customers arriving to your retreat that you need to give a proper service for. So you're playing the role of a yoga teacher and the retreat manager who is keeping the place, and then you provide service to your customers and you earn coins from doing that. Here you can see package customers, so we have sort of customers that only have one need, and then there are kind of people who want to stay longer at your place, and you know you need to commit for a longer periods of time, for 1 day or 3 days or 5 days, to taking care of those customers. Then the role of yoga within this experience. So there are small daily meditations that, you know, you can unlock every day when you return to the game. Then you can watch self-practice videos of yoga poses if you're interested in kind of seeing, so how do you actually do a tree pose or stuff like that, or a warrior. And so if this would be kind of a marrying history game, obviously, you know, like this type of content would be comparable to the background information, what you get about the marrying wars in a sort of context. So that's kind of how yoga becomes part of the gaming gameplay experience. Then the story evolves. So around your yoga floor, it might become monotonic with this type of mechanic, just to, you know, watch for a long time for some weird people doing poses in your weird retreat. So when you kind of further in the levels, you are able to unlock new buildings and new experiences that are also yoga relevant. So yoga goes to the sea, so you're able to teach paddleboard yoga to your customers. You're able to unlock a laughter yoga garden. And then we will also kind of offer led classes. So as a yoga retreat manager and yoga teacher, you will be able to teach led classes to your virtual customers. So that's something that we are actually currently working on adding to the game. You're able to challenge your friends, so, you know, do yourself a warrior pose and then send a challenge that, hey, you do this one as well. So this is basically the context for the discussion about the yoga retreat game and its go-to-market. So first, what I would like to say is that, well, one of the drivers for me becoming a founder of a games company was that I wanted to start from scratch. I didn't want to inherit anybody's old product with its problems. I wanted to kind of create something that I felt that, you know, it's a meaningful proposition for a female player, and then I wanted to kind of do it right from the beginning in a way that I've always liked, you know, to do things. So, you know, when you join games companies at certain phase, you always inherit somebody else's work. That one, at the age of 35, felt like something I didn't want to do any longer. So that's kind of part of my personal story behind this product. And that's why I've spent significant amount of time, even before starting the development, about really thinking what I want to do, why I want to do this, what I'm actually bringing to market, is there any value in what I'm doing, and stuff like that. And I strongly suggest that this part of the work that I did before any code was made has been kind of most significant and really important investment to do that you should not ignore. I even thought about this kind of in the background of my mind for a year before kind of coming up with the initial concept, that if after a year it still feels that I believe in the kind of core idea what I have, then it's worth all the money, all the trouble, all the pain that will follow, because that's what game development essentially is all about. So, target audience. Everything starts with the target audience. So to whom you really are making this game? Really, to whom? So what's kind of the focus in your product? What's really the focus? What's the essential thing? Why this type of product would be fun? Okay, so these people, this focus. So what do you really think is the market size? How many these types of people interested in this type of focus are there in the market? If you think about it critically. So these are really important questions to think about. That is the addressable market wide enough? Because if it's really niche, free-to-play, which is kind of one of the focuses today, becomes really, really challenging business model. Then again, if it has no focus or niche, it becomes also really, really challenging because there are so many big players with so much money that you're never able to compete. So try to kind of intellectually boil down reasonable enough focus with reasonable enough target audience that can somehow be viable proposition in today's competitive iOS, Android marketplaces and stuff like that. That really, you know, is worth all the time you put into it. That's why I wanted to start with it. That's why we're focused on female players that are interested in certain mechanic, in certain content, but are able to kind of but are really a global audience reaching and having a certain type of disposable income all over the world. Just as an example. Then, after those considerations, yes?
Question about the audience and the focus. You defined the audience and the focus yourself, right?
Yes.
Did you do it, or did you consider testing that assumption sort of between the audience and the focus? Was it there? Is it really so that there are these people, this audience that have this?
There are these people. 55% of the casual gaming market are women between 18 and 55 years.
I'm just interested, like, curious if you actually tested this, that they are interested in this kind of game. Or like, is it just saying that sometimes people have... Like,
if you consider the management mechanic, and female players, it's again tens of millions of female players who play management mechanic. So I didn't need to test those assumptions because those assumptions were verified. So for me, kind of the risky decision is to focus on well-being and authentic content with this game as well as the following games. So this one is then the part which makes kind of, you know, me an entrepreneur and a risk taker. because I believe there is such a market, and I believe there are also men actually that are interested in health and well-being, and not only women. But then again, you know, this type of focus, it's easier from the PR point of view. So that's why I always talk about the female market as a female player. But yes, so, you know, to some extent, there are kind of existing sources that, you know, you can just, you know, it's pure math. Yeah. You know how many these people are. Then you can see kind of, you know, what's going on, do a SWOT. Okay, experiences, females this many, management mechanic this many, experiences, iOS here, blah, blah, blah. So you kind of can see if there are gaps or not.
Did you focus on certain countries or did you took it as global?
From my point of view, so question was about countries that did I think about, you know, US or UK or Singapore or Korea. No, I did not, because then again, from coming from the well-being and yoga angle to this table, well, first of all, gaming audiences are global when we talk about tablets and the platforms that we were after. And then when you kind of look at the yoga market in everywhere in the Western world, so not in the developing world, it's like 10% of the population that has either once or several times been into yoga. So if you think about the kind of the crossover of casual gaming and yoga, there are already kind of large market sizes of both people that are there. Then also, particularly with respect to yoga retreats, since, you know, I believe that, you know, when you try to bring authentic content, which in our case is part of the thing, what I'm trying to do, you know, you need to be, so, you know, you need to be into that content. So, you know, you need to have the experience so that, you know, you treat that content right from the context that you have a lot of experience, you know, into kind of its philosophy, not only practices, so that, you know, you treat it respectfully. And that's kind of, you know, part of then about this particular product, but maybe not so relevant from other games' points of view. And so how are you different? You know, 1 million apps, 2 million apps, you know, next year, 5 million apps. So the business, the amount of stuff that is offered to people is, you know, just getting out of hand. And, you know, this is the reality. And the reality is that each and every one of us that belongs to this 1 million, 2 million or 5 million is competing from this attention. So this means that, you know, there needs to be a story. So not only that, you know, there is a big enough market, there is a focus and it's a good game, but there needs to be a story that will kind of flow with, you know, any marketing mechanism that you then choose to use. Let's talk about that later. But there needs to be a story that people can connect to, something that, you know, they will feel relevant and interesting and personal for them to kind of download your game from the App Store or from the Google Store. So before kind of using your money or anybody else's money to anything, I again strongly, you know, suggest that, you know, please think about this seriously, because then the more successful you will be, the more you think about these things beforehand. So the story and uniqueness. Around yoga retreats, around kind of our company, the points really are the intersection of gaming and yoga. Really kind of trying first in the world to utilize free-to-play mechanic to deliver some sort of authentic content experience in addition to a games format, to try to combine these three elements together. That's kind of, you know, what I've tried to push. Then, in reality, what is of interest to people is, so Tina, you're a woman, why are you making games? So the journalists that are interested about our story are mostly interested about me, not actually about our product, which is a continuous challenge for me, you know, not wanting to open up my closet to anyone, because it's my closet. And the company and the product are totally a separate thing. It's a team effort and not about me. So again, the more clear you are on the unique selling proposition about the game, focus about kind of what's unique, stuff like that, the more you're able to then kind of avoid these types of maybe a little bit negative issues about the whole how the world works, that people are actually more interested about people than any products nor any companies. So kind of I strongly suggest therefore once more to really, really focus on what is the uniqueness of your product so that you can keep talking about that one and not about yourself or your team, which becomes sooner or later really irrelevant for people. First in the world, yoga-themed mobile simulation game. So those words that I started with are really a thought-through process, why each of the words is part of that slogan. Every press release, every banner, every video ad, I try to fit as much as possible of those words into the messaging that we sent out there.
By the way, are there any others?
No. So, nobody. Obviously, there are lots of management games. There are lots of games targeted into women. But no one has tried to take yoga in this way to be part of a really, really real mobile gaming experience as we've tried to do. So then we started, and basically the whole last year we've been only focused on delivering Yoga Retreat on iOS, iPad, iPhone. iPhone is not yet out there in a pilot. iPad has been several months. We chose to do it in a way that we used 6 months to kind of deliver a really, really raw version of the game and then put it out there. And it's been out now, first in one market, now in three markets. And we've been kind of doing releases continuously to improve both the retention and monetization that, you know, you are probably now already throwing up because you've been hearing so much earlier on this course. So I thought that I just again highlight a little bit about the big picture. So first of all, in the old world, like even 2 years ago, when people were talking about games and kind of games development, they were meaning that they make a product and then they launch it. So when we're in the world of free to play, it's actually a service. And it means that the development and the development cost is only a small part of the total equation. So in terms of time, in terms of cost, development is a small effort. Go-to-market is actually as much of your budget, as much of your time consumption as is the development. And after that, you can only launch. And this is a significant difference compared to kind of how the game's development process has worked earlier. And the go-to-market period, you know, as the free-to-play change is now ongoing, so we're moving from pay to free-to-play, the go-to-market is becoming more and more extensive, taking more and more time, and thus taking more and more resources. And it's really, really kind of the part where you actually make the game work. And let's say, you know, you people mostly are young. I'm turning 40 this year. So I've been, people in the games business used to be working in a way that, you know, they go into a meeting room and they themselves then try to think about what all the people, all the players want. This is a totally, totally different type of world what we are talking about in here. We only make an initial guess. And then what we really do is we build, we develop together with the first pilot users. And we use them to tell us kind of what's working and what's not working. And having said that, it's really hard work, especially if you are a small company with small resources. But if you are prepared for it beforehand, if you are mentally prepared that, okay, it may take me 6 months, 7 months development, it may take me similar amount of time of go-to-market, then you can also prepare mentally, prepare your resources, prepare your budget. And therefore, this is something that I want to highlight, because then what normally happens in Finland, especially, you know, if you consider, you know, small startups that are developing games, is that they only budget for development. They never budget for go-to-market. And then we have, like, you know, tens of companies that are in the death valley, which is really stupid, and it's a waste of resources. So you people do not do that. So think ahead that this will actually take, you know, you need to have the development budget and you need to have the go-to-market budget. And do not start before you have both. So that's kind of one very practical advice I have for everyone. In terms of the go-to-market, in terms of the pilot, so as I said, we were first put the game, iPad version, out in one market. And then we started to drive a little bit traffic, collecting statistics, how everything works. We noticed we need to do a lot of changes. And then I kind of realized that, okay, this means that, you know, it's maybe 8 builds that we need to do before we are ready for worldwide commercial launch. And I'll come back to the metrics later and stuff like that. But so from the first day that we were out in Canada and I started to see kind of the figures from our analytics, what's going on, I noticed that the core loop works well. That retention-wise, we have like lot to do what we need to improve. And that's what we've done. Monetization-wise, lot to do what we need to do. I think many people would have at that point decided that, hey, we no longer continue with this project. But since, you know, I decided that, you know, all this pivoting, that, you know, people change plans immediately when they notice that, you know, something is not working, is also, in some cases, a bad decision. And I made a call that, okay, I believe we can raise the metrics 10% in terms of retention all the line. Now we've raised the metrics 8%. So I've basically proven every Finnish game designer who has said to me that you can only improve between, let's say, 3 and 5% wrong. So we've improved 8% day one, day 7, day 14, from where we were when we started.
So, sorry, is it 8 percentage points or improved by 8%?
Percentage points.
Okay.
Yes. In terms of LTV, also interesting. So, well, I don't know actually, you know, who else is currently piloting in Finland a free-to-play except Supercell and us. I don't know of any project, so I know a couple of companies that took out their free-to-play products after seeing that they are not monetizing. Again, currently, we are generating €2 LTV. Still not good enough, still we've improved a lot. So there are business decisions that, you know, you need to make at some point, whether, you know, like you continue with the project or whether you stop the project. However, based on my own experience, the whole process of 5 months of improvement has taught us so much about what actually works, that if we wouldn't have done this, if we would have started something from scratch, we wouldn't know a hell about this business, what we know now. So the whole process of improving our retention, improving our monetization, has made our team, our company, raise a level in terms of where we were last summer. So hard work sometimes pays off a lot of other dividends, not only, you know, retention and monetization dividends.
Sorry. Did you think that you went to soft launch at the right time? Would you rather have done it earlier so that you could have started learning earlier, or was that the right way to go?
Many people would have gone later if they would have been in my position. I always go too early because I'm impatient and I'm an entrepreneur And I don't mind what other people think about our game. I really don't think, you know, I'm not thinking about, therefore, you know, like we are out in these corners of the world that it really doesn't really matter if, you know, somebody in Canada writes a bad review or somebody in Finland does so. Who cares? Because really the market and the big market knows nothing yet about the game. So that's part of the strategy, that if you kind of are one of those who go out early, then choose the corners of the world carefully. That's my advice. If you are one of those who kind of are afraid of this bad review here and this bad review there, then you know, you can also do that, but you need more money. I think it becomes a lot more efficient with the users. So, and obviously, you know, like when you are a small company, you don't really need to care about your brand image like some of the bigger studios do. So from that point of view, you know, there is only to gain for you from having a real customer feedback. So that's kind of my opinion. But there are differences of opinion in terms of, you know, whether more polished is good or less polished is good. Since this is really a service, what we are building, that's why I thought that, you know, it makes sense to go out with alpha, not really even a beta. Okay. So in terms of then the metrics, what really, really is the most important thing is the LTV. And you've probably run through the kind of how to calculate the lifetime value of a user in here. Everyone, raise a hand who understands how to calculate lifetime value of a user.
I have faith.
Who understands now how to calculate lifetime value of a free-to-play user? Couple of hands. Okay. So maybe just to, because that's kind of something that is really, really the most important objective, maybe to use a couple of words then about that. So I come to yoga retreat, and let's say thousands of other people come to a yoga retreat as a player from, for example, a Facebook campaign. Next day, day one, well, let's say we all are the 1,000 people now. So 40% of us in this room return the next day. And then 36% of us return the day two. And 31% return day three. And so we go, day seven, 20% of us return. So this slice of a room returns day seven. This means, when we kind of think about, so 20% day seven liked about yoga retreat, other people found it's irrelevant, I don't like it, there's nothing for me. So this 20% then keeps on coming back. And so we go to day 30, and day 60. And again, it depends on a lot about the game. What's the kind of the lifetime? Whether people really, whether it can be considered that it's a 30-day game or 60-day game or 90-day game or like, you know, super some of the Supercell products, you know, 24 months game. But that's kind of one really, really the key objective to try to lengthen the time that those 20% that returned the day seven actually will return. Then every day, some people are paying. So let's say this row here, out of the 1,000 people that started and then the 20% that continued, let's say between 5 and 10% ever convert into paying users. So we try to kind of see how much revenues we make in terms of a metric called ARPDAU, so average revenue per daily active user. A user that logs into our game today or tomorrow and so on. So when we calculate lifetime value of a user, what we do is by using a mathematical formula, we basically calculate how many we kind of multiply the ARPDAU with these returning percentages until the point that we believe our kind of life cycle with this product lasts. So that's kind of the three essential components of the lifetime value, where it comes from. Retention, daily revenues per active users, and then the number of days that we kind of make an assumption that this game's life cycle is. So these are the this is the stuff that we try to improve when we pilot.
When you first enter the market, do you have a certain name for the length of the game? Is there a certain kind
of... Probably some people that are more sophisticated. For me, it was much too early to be thinking about LTV the first day, because you know, first you what you start with it is you start with the retention, and you start with seeing how it works, and you start to think about what to improve in terms of how to kind of improve the retention. And then you move into the monetization part, then you make changes, then you notice that, again, retention goes lower when you put the economy tighter. And then you kind of start this dance between the monetization and the retention, so that you make them flow together really nicely. And sometimes it's kind of an Argentinian tango to try to do that dance, because, you know, like for me, obviously, you know, like I want to pump up the revenues. And then I always notice that, you know, okay, because I have that driver in me, I like the monetization myself, I prefer to do it all the time. So then I start to notice that, you know, we tighten up the economy too much. Even currently, we are in that situation that we make really good numbers in terms of how the game sells per daily active user. We perform not so well in the retention in the longer periods of time. This is because I'm geared towards prioritizing always how people use money and not necessarily kind of wanting to give everything for free. But so you really kind of, still I strongly suggest that one of the key learnings is to kind of try to somehow even intellectually capture the concept of lifetime value. It is really beneficial not only for games development but for many other online and mobile businesses to try how you estimate value of a customer. So that's why, you know, like it's really something that you know, try to focus on. So retention tells about how nice the game is, how well it performs in those campaigns, how you kind of drive them. And then the sales obviously tells about, you know, how you know, like well you're doing, because obviously if some people are paying, then you know, like it's also a token of appreciation, at least to me, that, you know, it's been a nice experience and I want to continue it. So some people have thrown in cash and so on. Okay, so are we ready to rock again or what's up? Okay, so I got a few questions from people here. So after I've gone through my last slide, I got one question relating to the kind of funding and financing of the company and the game production, and I will address that then after running through this wrap that I planned. And then I also got a question which is relevant still to this piloting issue, that, you know, what you know, amount of content we had ready when we went for the pilot for the first market. So we had for about 7 days of gameplay, if you like really play actively. You might say that, you know, that's, or, you know, looking at it in hindsight, it was too little. So maybe a little bit more would be my recommendation. And then while kind of explaining that, I've been also finding out actually, you know, more stuff during the pilot in Canada about the actual nature of this product. So, you know, if you kind of download it now, you see that there are these new facilities that I mentioned, So paddleboard yoga on the sea and laughter yoga garden and then stuff like that that we're building. So it looks like that this type of game is kind of like a hobby. So it's a hobby that, you know, you use your time 5 minutes a day or, you know, 5-10 minutes every other day or so. So that has led me to choose type of a direction that every 10 or 5 levels we give something new that, you know, you can basically then, you know, get kind of new stuff to this core loop to which our business model is tied. And I kind of have this feeling that, for example, the laughter yoga garden, you know, it's kind of a really risky decision to make these types of, you know, laughter yoga, because, you know, some people think it's really stupid and some people laugh out loud, which was my, you know, kind of intention. But it seems to me that, you know, this type of, let's say, game that does not really have really any type of chat or team or clan mechanic or stuff like that, you kind of need to build these content updates and in that way give this type of feeling that, hey, this product can grow on eternity, that they will keep on adding this stuff every month for me. So especially, you know, if you consider the paying users and the feeling that they get from content updates, that there is a new building, there is a new concept, and that it happens at certain, let's say, not predictable, but, you know, certain intervals that they, you know, grow to learn. That's also important, let's say, from monetization point of view, especially with these types of games that, you know, yoga retreat is now a case in point. Okay, so we talked about a little bit about what to think beforehand and then the piloting. And then, you know, it's getting closer to the time that you're actually launching. So launching worldwide, launching in every single country, every single app store or every single Google Android device, whatever is your chosen platform. And this is the time that we actually are now in. So I'm really talking about these issues. This is really what I'm preparing for right now. So I'm describing kind of the next few weeks and months of my life. So you put your game out there. What happens? 2 million games. If, you know, you don't get any traffic, nobody really knows. So you need to also think about really carefully what to do. Apple people say Thursday is a good day to launch. This is due to the fact that marketing costs over the weekends are higher, so therefore they recommend for the developers that Thursday is full of hope. So some Thursday before summer, it will happen to us that we will go out. So we need to have a really clever plan. Where do we get this initial burst of traffic that will push Yoga Retreat into the top 10 or top 25 in chosen markets? iOS formula, so the App Store, how it generates the rank, is really interesting animal. So there is really a formula that calculates what type of reviews your game is getting, what number of installs your game is getting, what type of monetization your game is getting. And then based on that, you know, you either get some organic growth or you don't. So most of the developers actually plan, knowing this formula, with different strategies. So first strategy is some that are small, they choose to work with the publisher that has already existing traffic that can be thrown into the game. Or then through cross-promotion, so joining network of small games where everybody shares traffic. Somewhere you need to get this initial boost of people that will raise your rank that will give you some organic boost. You also need these good reviews. So you need all of your friends, all of your pilot players. You need all of the people giving you 5 stars. Because that influences at least by 20% the Apple formula. The higher the rank, the higher the organic growth. So there are differences of opinion. Of, let's say you're able to get 100,000 installs the first day, you're out. Some people say you can multiply, given that you know these 100,000 installs also generates good revenues, also generates good reviews, that you can multiply the organic that number of installs with 3x, 5x, or even 10x. So really the key issue is when you go out, where do you get the initial burst? Then after the first few days, so it has been a Thursday and then it's next Monday. So you know how it's gone now for 4 days. During that week, if there is kind of no organic growth, no organic lift, gradually what happens is that your installs start to go down, which means you need to start marketing the game. Which means already when you've been in pilot, in your pilot markets, you've needed to test out the ways you're going to market the game, integrate advertising networks, know how to work with them, have them kind of fully operational, your campaign formats. You need, in my opinion, not only one tool, not only two tools, but several tools to do marketing for your game that are already integrated, familiar to you, when you start to kind of get ready for this launch. And this is a part, in addition to funding, where Finnish developers normally suck. So, point number 3, actually, to take from this class. Think about beforehand, have more funding than you think you would need. And 3, think about your marketing, do your marketing integrations, do this work, grind your networks before the launch. Because if you start to do this then, what happens is that there are like hundreds mobile networks, advertising mediums available in this world. You have absolutely no idea which ones of them will work for you. It's a similar process of finding out the networks that work for your game, where you get quality traffic, where you get a lot of installs, not maybe at all monetizing users, stuff like that. So it's almost as important part as the kind of retention and monetization development to actually develop this ability to kind of generate traffic and players for your game in the world where there are 2 million, 5 million, 10 million options what to play. Coming back to the lifetime value, and since we're talking about free to play, the trouble is following. Users are really expensive. So when you kind of then start this piloting, that you integrate advertising networks into your game, you start kind of doing trial campaigns in New Zealand, Canada, Australia, wherever, you quickly find out that to buy one soul, it's over $2, sometimes even $3 for a soul. So, I buy all of you. That will cost me, you know, $80 or something like that. I would need to make this money back from you people. And that's the essence of lifetime value importance. That what we really are doing is that you people give me more money than I actually use to buy you. And you can't really count on Apple helping you or the organic lift helping you if you're not really talking about, let's say, tens of millions of dollars that you're using to the initial boost. So therefore, high monetizing game is really important to have. therefore, all the stuff that, you know, we've kind of discussed today is really important to do, because building a game that generates over $3 of LTV is hard work. So all of the stuff is needed in order to achieve kind of those metrics. In terms of marketing, what tends to happen is that campaigns tend to fade after a few days. So when you then integrate the networks and do the trials, you quickly start to notice that the first days, kind of day one, two, three in the campaigns, they are really good. And then also kind of the install performance, so how many installs you get per day with same money, tends to fade away. So therefore, it's also important that you have a lot of experience with a lot of different networks so that, you know, you can play around and choose and create a variety.
Excuse me. About the marketing, since you have quite a specific theme for the game, have you done or have you been considering to do marketing by having a, like a blog or posting to forums or sort of integrating with the online yoga?
No, no, because I'm not the casual players and not the yoga practitioners.
But you don't think that they could be...
No, I don't, because I want money out of the game and I know who pays.
But you think that there's no return of interest in this kind of
activity? No.
Okay.
No, there is a better return on invest to make the $3 LTV out of casual game players than yoga practitioners. And basically that's why I'm really kind of high, you know, trying to emphasize the fact that making money out of your game is important, because what's going to happen in a world, 5 million apps, 10 million apps, 15 million apps, these costs are rising. They are not lowering.
What about, do you think that it could boost the viral?
No, I don't.
Okay.
So viral, good game is viral game. If, you know, like some players like Yoga Retreat, they will tell other players, that one I believe. I believe I need to make stuff to the game that gives people something to talk about. Therefore, the kind of the daily meditations, sharing self-practice videos, stuff like that is there. People want to look good, so virality never happens if you make people look bad. So we have a lot of these elements inbuilt into the game mechanic that, you know, yes, we believe in virality. However, I don't believe that people, you know, who are really enthusiastic of yoga are our main audience for the game. As I said, I believe 18 to 15-year-old casual game players who like simulation games and are interested in well-being and health are our audience. So therefore, kind of advertising networks and using those is kind of the main mechanic that I believe in. And that's why I want to kind of be really focused on monetization in order to kind of drive enough numbers of people.
And so what are your planned marketing channels?
I don't have a plan. I already know them. So we have a lot of tools integrated. The best tools currently are Facebook advertising tools, as well as the ChartBoost named mobile ad network. So they perform best for us at the moment. Also video networks. So companies like AdColony and Wungle and Applifier from Finland. So video networks work really well for us because the 15-second video obviously conveys a lot more about the gameplay as any kind of static banner advertisement. So, you know, we're pretty much doing all of the kind of CPI, CPC, CPM type of campaign trials at the moment. And when we go live, I want to have at least 20 working tools as well as formats in my pocket that I'm then able to use after the initial launch date. So, coming back to my point of earlier that, you know, when people talk about free to play, it's not games development, it's really games publishing, which means that, you know, you need to deliver a service and a product, you need to deliver user acquisition, you need to deliver customer service, you need to deliver virality. So you need to deliver basically all of these four elements and not only a product. So that's what we are talking about here. Yeah.
Can you give us any kind of figures that how much would you be will you be spending on acquisition?
No.
Thank you.
Okay. So where were we? I think let's talk a little bit about this virality.
Because yeah. You were talking about that you're gaining targeting for 20 tools which you can use.
Sorry, targeting?
For 20 different tools.
Yeah, okay.
So how many have you tried already? What is the like, mechanics to find those?
So basically the mobile advertising network, so if we are talking about the CPI tools, it means that you know you need to kind of integrate the SDK of that advertising network into your game, and then you're able to do a trial. So you just need to integrate the SDKs from different networks and to do trials, ask your friends basically which networks have performed well for their games, you know, That's the process that you know you need to go through. So we have currently something like 15 different SDKs integrated, and we found out, I think, with six or something that they don't seem to be working for us for one reason or another, and it has no pattern, none whatsoever that. Why something is working and why something is not working. So, like one video network over one video network, they may have a lot of difference that, you know, there is really no explanation why is that. With the CPI, I can just say that mobile advertising network business is not really open business. So they are not really sharing a lot of information to you where the traffic comes from, which is a problem, which needs to improve. Also, they are not really transparent on you know, like, it's a difficult kind of situation because, you know who are you trying to find, and they are not able to or not willing to give you information how many these types of people or players of these games or whatever they really have. So therefore, I'm just saying and highlighting this point that always when we talk about games development, you know, when we come to the world of free to play, then you also need to consider piloting this aspect when you are kind of in the test marketing phase. So not only how the product works, but also, you know, like, which ones, you know, how are you going to drive the users after you know, you are out there? And you need to be having a funding for that, because obviously there is a payout cycle and everything. So another problem. However, if in the test marketing phase you are able to generate good metrics, then normally the marketing funding should be something you would get. However, that again depends on, you know, what's your focus, what's your strategy, what's your credibility as a company, blah, 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 blah. So another funding problem will result at the marketing phase of the game. First funding problem is to finding enough for development and kind of test marketing, and then second problem is to find someone who is willing to kind of put a significant budget that can be used for user acquisition to the table. Questions?
Yeah, just to follow up shortly on that. So how do you do it so that you isolate alpha, beta, live on Canada, and then you have 15 ad networks and their SDKs integrated, and you make a budget of 500 euros or 1,000 per each, and you see how many users come in?
Exactly.
But that's still, if you have planned like gotten 500 users from each one ad network, you still don't know if they were like all the users they had or if it will scale. Well, as you said, they perform very differently, so does this pilot kind of give you an idea how they will perform in other countries or kind of beyond that pilot?
Obviously not. but somehow, you know, you need to able to generate the formats. You know, I'm not going to be saying much about this, but I will say I will use 70% of my budget in the one tool. I already know that, because the performance is so clear.
That's based on the file that you saw. You didn't know it before, or?
Well, I have a good guess with the type of mechanic what we are talking about. However, I kind of personally, I'm a big believer in video. I would hope that the video networks would be larger, because I think videos are really good kind of way to find out about what's the game about. I kind of hate this process that, you know, there is a stupid app store icon which doesn't tell anything. And then, you know, people, you know, download it and then they trash it. So that's why I kind of think that the video would be a good way to communicate to players that, you know, then, you know, you didn't get any of these unnecessary installers. So that's why there are kind of things that, you know, I'm a big believer of that I've wanted to try them out because I think they will grow. But for this year, I think I will use 70% of the budget into one tool. Or maybe two tools, 70%. So let's say so, because I have like two really good tools for us. And also, you know, like it's really, really a business that changes fast. So let's say 2015 will look totally different from 2014, how kind of, you know, you drive traffic and how you use the network. So that's kind of my personal opinion. Okay? There.
Do you have some kind of mechanism built in your game that if I, for example, create a fan of your game and I play it, that I can sort of like propose it to, for example, for him, this is a great game, that this. Is it some kind of built in that game?
You can challenge if you're willing to do Facebook integration.
Okay.
So, and obviously, you know, like, yeah, so basically in our type of experience, we are big believers in Facebook integration. So 20% of our players do it. Not more, not less, but 20% do it.
Have you also calculated that how much that brings in?
Yes. But, yeah, so, but then again, you know, that's not enough. So I'm also a believer of YouTube integration, Twitter integration and stuff like that. So we will continue to expand. But, you know, the performance of kind of whatever we've kind of built around Facebook ideology, it's clear and it's working. But in 1.7, we will have also Twitter and hopefully kind of something else that you're able to do. So there was one. Question, no. Okay. So, virality. Yeah, so if you plan to copy someone else's idea, well, first of all, I think that, you know, it's bad business these days to build pure clone products. And I'm, again, of a different opinion with, you know, many other people on that. So I think some elements you can clone, but, you know, cloning of games is not a good idea because all of the things, you know, we've gone through require a unique and compelling story that is somehow different and will be able to resonate. And kind of with respect to virality and word of mouth, many of these elements that you find in current games, if you look at them as players and users, feel artificial. So they are not really thought in a way that what would people really like to share from this particular product, from this particular game? What would be really something that would be relevant for them to share? What would make them look good to share? So it's very easy to kind of say this word, virality, word of mouth, but they are difficult words because you need to grasp of, you know, the situation, the feeling that makes me send out a message into a social network where I have, you know, 1,000 friends or 5,000 followers. So just to say why I'm not a big believer in working together with yoga forums. I'm a big believer in the virality, and I think even for us that we have kind of unique content which is relevant for these people that makes them look good. It's challenging to kind of find the right places within the game. What makes a player tweet now? What makes a player post a YouTube clip now? It's extremely difficult from these types of mobile games to find out real spots where that would feel natural. So just to say, if you have good ideas on this one, if you have a gaming concept, you know, don't try to implement this in a way that many people do that, okay, you know, I just copy-paste the same feeds as some other developer has done. I don't really think that that has any value, and you should kind of spend your time more cleverly than, you know, doing this. So try to figure out something else. Then about partnerships, I already said that if you consider to be a small developer, it's important to try to think about how to generate the traffic on a continuous basis. It may be that, you know, it makes sense that you work together with the publisher, or you work together with the brand, or you work together with someone who is able to kind of give you on a continuous basis some sort of traffic that is coming to your product. In terms of PR, it's really important. So there are probably already discussions that, you know, you guys had around that, you know, you need to get kind of review sites excited, and you need to get, you know, this and that excited. But the most important objective behind the PR is whatever platform you've chosen, you know, whatever is your platform for your game, you want to reinforce the relationship that you have with the platform owner via the PR. You want those sources that your platform follows, reads, loves, to write about your game, about your company, in a positive light. You start, you can obviously, you know, build those relationships, and you should via kind of personal interactions in trade shows and, you know, wherever. But PR is a great way to reinforce kind of your visibility to your platform owner. And I can really speak from experience here, because I've been working for Nokia for 6 years, out of which two I was part of the Nokia's developer program earlier in 2000. And those companies at the time that, you know, kind of we read, you know, who were we interested about, who we gave access to our kind of priority programs, who we featured to the operators. So none of this has changed. If you're Apple or if you're Google or if you're whatever, you know, you follow also certain sources, and you need to get your game to those sources. And that's just, you know, as simple as it is. So everything kind of, you know, equation requires success in many, many different tiny little details that some of them relate to actual game and some of them relate to completely something else. So advertising networks or some other things you need to kind of be doing around your product. And that's the world of free-to-play games. And let's see, I think it's really difficult world if you are fixated into the old model of doing games. If you are not, so if you are open up to new possibilities and you are willing to work hard, make a lot of changes and to kind of find your way, what's your way with the product, with the marketing tools, with the monetization, it's possible to succeed. But I can say from my personal experience that it's not easy and it's not pivoting. So it's commitment to success of doing all this work. Every day until it succeeds. And that's kind of stuff that, you know, comes back to where we started, that think beforehand, all of this that I've told, all of this work, all of these many years of your life, of your, you know, team's lives. I think it's something that, you know, just consider, and that's why personally I'm saying that I don't regret the 12 months that I spent in my own head thinking about if this is worth all of my time, all of the other people's time, all of the money, all of the investors' money. I don't regret it, because I think that at that time, if I still believe after such a long time that it's a project that, you know, needs to be done and it has reasonable enough success, then go for it and do this stuff. But just, you know, people tend to take kind of lightly very big challenges. So don't take lightly, take seriously, and then once you decide, follow this track and complete each step, complete each level. And then there comes a day that you are able to launch, and there also comes a day that sometimes the world and the universe will give you some help if you are persistent enough. And that one you kind of realize also when you look back the path so far, that some key revelations that have happened during the process are really kind of then the juice that keeps this type of project going and furthering. I promise to say a few words about the funding. So I would say, obviously this depends so much on a context, on an idea. But the minimum budget on a bank account to me is 200,000 euros these days. Better if it's 500,000 when you start. That's what I would say. And this is just because I know how much time, how many people, what competencies are required in the world of free to play. So anything kind of less than 200,000 will be really, really hard to succeed. And when I'm saying now these numbers, I'm not talking about user acquisition. I'm talking about the development plus the go-to-market. So that's kind of, you know, at this very moment, at this very time of year, of market, what the numbers are. It may be that the numbers are rising. But since, you know, like some of you may be considering your own projects, your own companies, maybe already have one, also from that point of view, I can say that my belief is that not only user acquisition prices are rising, also kind of the development costs that you need to be prepared for, you know, to pay salaries to yourself, to the team, whatever, they are rising. So that's kind of the minimum that I would secure to any new effort. So let's say my plan is to do a food game, you know, with similar types of ideas and similar logic the next. I will not start that project until we've secured kind of independent money, independent resources from Yoga Retreat production and marketing, at least 500,000 for that project. So just to give you an idea that, you know, we will start the next IP not until we have extra money, that much, which is not anyway tied to this project that you saw currently.
I got a question back here. I think that's great advice if you are a 39-year-old person thinking of becoming an entrepreneur like me also. Mm-hmm. But how about what advice would you give to yourself if you would be like a 20-year-old student now? Do you have to raise 500,000 or 200,000 before you start?
Well, that's the reality. Well, you know, iOS, mobile games, the bar of, you know, and we are kind of barely, so I'm not lying. So, you know, like, you see, you know, we are barely kind of succeed, barely just on our way, maybe there, with these numbers, Eric, that I said. So, you know, I think it would be intellectually dishonest to say that, you know, if you're a 20-year-old or 39-year-old, it really doesn't matter, that's the number. So maybe if you are a 20-year-old, what you do is you actually go and work for a project where you learn and have a CV, and then you raise. So I think that would be something I would say at this point in time. However, for that person, it won't be free to play any longer when it's time to raise, because the market has changed, the platforms have evolved, and good time depends. So markets kind of fluctuate. Now it's really good time in mobile, tablets, whatever. So again, you know, don't get into a downturn phase. If you're now 20, after 5 years or 25, you'd be ready, and it's a down market. Stay in that job, get more experience. So that's also something that always to look for, you know, how the world is turning and what's the right time to hit what idea. So maybe kind of coming back to the Gayatri Studios and the yoga retreat and, you know, these kind of mega trends and what's going on. So also kind of coming from that angle, that so in US, when we look at the yoga business, it's 10 billion, and it's 30,000 yoga studios in every block in every major US city. Well, obviously the US is my main focus, as it's very entertainment driven. It's not so serious as, you know, we Europeans or even we Scandinavians tend to be. So even yogis in US have much more humor than yogis in Finland. Not talking about the gamers in Finland or the gamers in US, but anyway, the kind of attitude climate of, you know, what can be embedded into entertainment is different from what we are talking about in here. And that's why, you know, like, in the first place, I probably, if I would have stayed my whole life in Finland and lived in Helsinki and worked with the gaming guys in Helsinki, I wouldn't have dreamed to start Gayatri Studios and Yoga Retreat. But since I've traveled and I've done yoga with the New York bankers, I have a little bit, let's say, wider trust in terms of, you know, how the market outside of Finland will actually, you know, be receptive to these types of ideas once we have kind of necessary proof. Now we have the first metrics, which already helps tremendously. So I can say that, you know, I've been, you know, not ridiculed, at least in front of my face, but at least behind my back, like for quite some time. Now when I start to tell about our retention and especially about our ARPDAU, I get pretty kind of, you know, people get quiet. So it's a good sign. Last week in Sweden, you know, there was one investor who was invested in two games companies, and he said, congratulations, these are really great numbers. So that's what I can say, that, you know, sometimes persistent creates rewards. However, sometimes it's also wise to stop a project. So especially kind of now that we are talking about games and these types of numbers, there might also come a situation that you're in Canada with your game and you see it's never going to work. So that's also something that it's wise, very wise, to realize that what is the point that it makes sense to continue and what is the point that it makes sense to stop. And that's one of the most difficult decisions in this business. After everything that I've done, everything, you know, what I've said, it's really kind of difficult to say that should I continue this path, should I stop? And now what we know is that at least, you know, two Finnish games companies have withdrawn from the market after, you know, putting to Canada something for pilot. So it really happens that people put games out there and then they kind of see that the core loop is not going to work. So that's also something that even though you are 20 and you manage to get that 200,000, there may come a point that you still notice based on your analytics and your revisions that it's not working, and then take it away and do something better. Therefore, never use all of the eggs what you have, you know, to get to the point that you are in Canadian pilot. That's why I'm also talking about this funding so much, because it's good to have at least 100,000 euros in bank account if you've not succeeded in Canadian pilot.
Really good advice is, and if it's if succeeding takes kind of guts, and it's about kind of who makes the right decision and kind of hangs into the game if it's like barely succeeding. How long a runaway or how long a payback time do you think that you should be looking at?
What do you mean, runaway by cash in a bank account,
yeah,
or?
Or when, if you are almost succeeding and you think that, okay, it will break even in a few months. So how many months is that few months? What time should the game be so successful that now it should be definitely kind of covering the losses that the development made? 6 months from the launch, the latest, or 1 year from the launch, the latest, or like 2 years?
Really, really good question. You have very good prospects of becoming very rich in the gaming business by asking that question, because that's really the key issue now, 2014, because those cycles are lengthening. And that's why I was saying that games really are becoming like services. And when we consider the online services world and kind of how the users, you know, tend to, let's consider Spotify. So, you know, now they are really successful. So how many years have they been on the losses? Really, really long time. But it's such a great service. So what would have you done if you would have been Spotify investor? They've known all along that it will come together, but it's many, many years that they will make losses with such a model that they started with. So that's why there is really no generic advice for a games company or a games entrepreneur on that particular stuff. It obviously depends where your target is. You know, what's your ultimate game? Obviously not this one product, never, but a couple of products at least that, you know, build a portfolio and stuff like that. So, but this time is lengthening. Therefore, the investment numbers are growing. So this is really one of my key learnings from last autumn, freshly, to you people, that normally it was in a way that 6 months or 8 months development, couple of months pilot. It may be that the pilot is 6 months, 8 months long before you're able to launch, because kind of the figures are rising what you need to reach. And you know, you can calculate yourself what this really means from kind of piloting point of view and stuff like that.
I'd be really interested to hear a bit more in detail, like about the iteration. Like, what kind of things did you need to change? Was there, like, let's say, like, goal of the game? Did that change, or like, you know?
No.
You said that the core would work, but
yeah.
What
has worked from the very beginning has been taking care of the customers, and you know, doing yoga on the floor and stuff around that. Then, pretty much. And yes, the buildings that you need, that has also worked. Pretty much everything else has been done again and again and again. There is really no, I can't even remember all the stuff what we've changed, quite frankly. So we've made at least 7 builds during these several months now. And it's always kind of, you know, 1 step here, 2 step back. 2 step forward, 1 step back.
But it's not only like graphics or stuff, it's really like the kind of things that you do in the game. Was it that kind of stuff?
Yes, everything. So therefore it's a really difficult question to kind of say, because I would need to kind of go through all of our builds, what was in the design, I don't even remember, because now I only remember the last build and the one that we are doing now, quite frankly.
And actually, also just thinking about the funding that you said that it takes 200k, because I was thinking that maybe some of these things, the changes that you were doing during this phase, maybe you could have learned those things, because you were saying that this customer feedback was really beneficial for you. Maybe you could have even extended the same strategy to the period before the alpha.
Yeah, we tested all along. Okay. It has not generated. So inviting 10 people to kind of play paper prototypes, useless. All that stuff that you read in books, it's really worth nothing compared to the real point when you started to kind of read the analytics from the tools. So that's kind of at least, so obviously we had a lot of these player tests. Now when I think of, what we found out back then, so last spring in those tests, and what I've been able to kind of find out during then the fall with real users, I wouldn't put much emphasis on paper prototyping, nor, inviting people to our office. So, yes, a few people, yes, a few friends, but then that's kind of overly emphasized in the world where you can drive in real people and get 600 people to try your product and, read their level funnel, read where they leave the game, read which dialogues they opened, en masse. So what is more beneficial? Because that's statistically valid. The one tester that comes is only one opinion.
How long testing periods you have before you make a decision? Okay, this is something that you need to change.
I think the difficulty with the statistics is still that you can only identify the problems. You never can identify what are the right solutions. So therefore, coming back to your question of what we actually have changed, there are so many things we've changed and I don't remember them all, because we've tried out many things to kind of similar problems as solutions. And especially with respect to kind of the economy and, how that then builds together with the retention, that's kind of those two elements are difficult to get to work together. So that you don't, you either don't spoil either or, as I said earlier. But coming back to your question, I think, the challenge is that in analytics you identify the challenges. Then, you in your creative team figure out what would be the solutions, corrective actions. You maybe even do some A-B testing if, you have possibility for that, so that you're able to present different players different solutions. We don't have that type of luxury in a small company, but some larger companies obviously have that. For me, it's been almost as important to reinforce what works. I will say this again. I think many games companies are very focused on, this Michelangelo model that you remove what doesn't work and what is left works. Then from the statistics you can also see what works. Like you can see that taking care of customers works. Self-practice videos. So average player watches 6 videos in our game. Think about the crazy bastards in the statistics that do watch more, because I don't know. Maybe you would have watched 1, so it means some other people have watched 600. So from that point of view, it's also important to reinforce what works. So when you kind of consider this piloting and what to do, what not to do, people talk always the same things about the analytics. I don't know what the people in here have thought, but maybe just from my personal kind of design point of view, never forget what works and build your strengths in the game around what you know works.
Which analytics tools did you use and how much did you build yourself? Did you use ready-made solutions?
Always ready. So all the ready-made components. We started with Flurry, which is best because in terms of kind of getting your product together, because it has event and event parameter data. So it's really kind of useful in terms of kind of monitoring what players do. They don't offer any reasonable retention metrics, so you need to have completely another tool to follow the retention. And then the only feasible way to monitor the sales is actually the iTunes Connect and the device manufacturer, because there you really kind of see what's going on. We have kind of used Hasoffer's MAT tool to follow the campaigns and the whole experience, but we are continuously evaluating new tools how to improve our analytics. So we've used Game Analytics tool from Denmark, and we are currently evaluating both Omniata and Adex. And then we have the 15 ad networks that I told you. So that's already 20 different tools. So I don't know which kind of, you know, what type of majors you guys have had in school, but let's say if you know, if you're good in good with Excel and you know good with statistics, it certainly helps in in this process how you kind of use the tools and how you are able to turn them into your advantage. So that's something from personal experience that I've learned.
You were talking about the worldwide market, and then you were talking about development costs. I would still be wondering, when you're talking about worldwide, how much of the revenue do you think you get from the Asian market? Do you separate it? And do you think you drain the opportunity of Asian market for the revenue? And do you think that number for the development and, you know, the overall number of the investment would change if the person would target the Asian market first?
What would you, when you say Asian, specify, you mean, let's say, Western Asian, like Singapore, Hong Kong, blah, 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 Australia,
example,
or Japan or Korea?
I would say
not Western.
For the Chinese-speaking,
Chinese
would have completely different marketing scheme, for example, and they would say that the way to launch in the real market would be way easier than here, therefore they have to spend a lot less money on this part, for example. I'm not sure about the development costs.
Well, China may be a good opportunity if you are willing to work with Android. So all of the people are using Android devices. If you, you know, have good relationship with publishers that have basically created preferred partner relations to Android device makers in China. So it's a different type of, let's say, a business model. So you wouldn't be doing free-to-play self-publishing in China. So you would be a developer, there would be a publisher, and then there would be device manufacturers, and then there would be consumers. So we would be talking about different value chain in China. In Japan, Korea, same thing. You could never have anything made in here, be working there without kind of deep localization. And now when I say localization, I'm not talking about language or the user interface. So, no questions, total silence. One more.
Just a quick about the future of semi-small developers. Do you see a future, or do you see that it's changing so much that it's very high risk that you have to be a very big corporation to be able to attend?
For Finland's sake, I say that, you know, we have now a lot of kind of small studios, which is a great thing. I hope, you know, more of them will become mid-core. And then that's kind of, you know, my hope. And but it requires cleverness in these decisions. And that's why I, you know, hope that, you know, you people in here are the ones that, you know, will push from small to mid. And you know, like, it may be that it's not the first company, but the second company. But that's why it's important to have this education and to share experiences and really practical experiences like these that, you know, make you sort of, you know, dreaming realists from the beginning. So that's kind of, I hope, the attitude climate that, you know, you have a competence of, you know, games business and games development and stuff like that. And when you're equipped with this type of really concrete understanding from different companies, you know, you're able to avoid some of the mistakes from the very beginning that you would kind of do as a first-time entrepreneur, for example, or first-time being part of that type of team who is first-time entrepreneurs. So that's, you know, now I think the key issue here that, you know, I want to kind of share positive and negative and, you know, realistic and optimistic and, you know, many angles to the same box, because then that kind of can boil down and, you know, you can make your own plan cleverly, and that's what I really hope that many of you will do. One more and then I think we need to stop. Or
okay, is that in the beginning that you want to start from scratch because you wanted to do things properly and right from
yes,
the beginning?
Yes, exactly.
So at this point, what do you think, how well have you succeeded?
So far. Well, now it looks good because, you know, we have this, you know, we have 500 players, which is kind of having a really good metric. You know, it's been hell of a lot more work than I thought because the market changes all the time. So when, you know, market is not a steel drain, it, you know, when, you know, you decide to jump on that, then things around you change. But, you know, we are so much better team now than we were 2 years, 1 year ago at the same time, because of all of this, you know, what I just went through, that I can say that, and we've not run out of money, not at all. So, you know, we can run without any sales for quite some time, which is something that gives me great confidence in terms of kind of, because, you know, if you would be in a situation that, you know, you're running out of money in 3 months' time, it's a situation that will stress you out so that you are not delivering for the customers, which then results into kind of bad things. So from that perspective, I'd say that, you know, given, you know, the time and the money we've used, we are probably the most capital efficient company in Finland to reach the metrics what we now have. So many have used less money but not achieved the metrics what we've achieved. And that's, I think, something that, you know, many people may think that, so why you have not raised, like, you know, 10 million or stuff like that. And then for me, I've been in business for so long that I always raise the stuff kind of little bit beforehand, because, you know, it's just the way that, you know, I don't like money raising. I don't, you know, really feel that that's the business we're in. We're in the business of doing this. We're in business. And then we kind of focus to the fundraising when we need to focus on that. And then other times we make business from our games and we make games. And that's kind of how I want to keep our company focused. Okay. No.
Tiny question. It was just like, now that you said the two words, I was wondering, was it that the team shaped the project, or did the project shape the team around, and then you proceeded with this team?
So what do you mean?
I mean, what was it that the game that you create now is created by the team that was originally within the core, or was it that the first was the idea of the game, and then the team was colliding around?
The concept was first. So we are product, not team driven. And I think still kind of we are, maybe to little bit say about the roles, because now that, you know, there have been different people giving lectures. What's the time, Ilkka, by the way, now?
It's 5 to 7.
5 to 7, okay, so I need to wrap up. So maybe something also that, you know, games business traditionally has very strict roles, you know, graphical designer, you know, software developer, game designer, and this and that and whatever. And I think that's maybe something that is about to, or should a little bit change, that especially in a small team, for example, given that you know you asked the question of product and its design, we don't have actually a designer role in the company. We used to have it. But what happened was that it was not really kind of, you know, how would I say? We didn't not necessarily buy, all of us, the one person's decisions on functionalities. So I decided that we actually do it in a way that we, all of us, do design. So I start the game in a way that, with respect to each of the builds, I put ideas on paper that blah, 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 this is kind of based on, you know, these findings, la, 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 and everyone contributes. So from different angles, and we create together a concept for every build we make. So we've chosen not, maybe also because of, you know, not having so many people, very unconventional ways how to work. Obviously there are coders, obviously there is a graphical designer, obviously there are marketeers, obviously there is me, there is tester, there are different roles, yes. But in terms of design, we've actually made it a team effort. I don't know if anyone else has done it, I don't know other companies, but for us, it has worked really well. And, you know, but fundamentally, for example, game economy is my responsibility. So I manage the game economy Excel. I make the decisions related to the game economy. But when we talk about the functionalities and what makes sense from the player point of view, what we make to the builds, we are actually a chain of people, and it goes back and forth until we agree that, okay, this is good, we do. So maybe to answer your question, product was first, so that was the hen. And then, you know, there was the egg, that was the team, and now it's kind of, I don't know what is the egg and what is the hen. So that's kind of how it evolved. Okay, good. I want to thank you. So this was my presentation, and you've been really listening carefully. So I want at least, you know, a couple of new entrepreneurs, and, you know, hope great success to everyone in here in any role you choose to play. So I hope this has been really useful, and you know, I hope to kind of see your faces in our gaming gatherings during the next years here. So, Ilkka, anything from you or?
Oh, thank you.
Okay, kiitos.